Hi, and welcome to the Vancouver Life Podcast.
This podcast is created to answer the most talked about questions when it comes to navigating the Vancouver real estate market.
I'm your host, Dan Wortel, a licensed agent and accredited real estate investment advisor based here in Vancouver, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ryan Dash.
Hi, Dan. I'm also a local realtor, an exhausted father of two, husband of one, and really happy to be here.
Let's get right into today's episode. Is Vancouver going to experience a low inventory environment forever? Well, you got to think, if anybody out there right now is trying to buy a home, you know, there is not much to choose from. In fact, there's such a low inventory environment right now that we would need 60% more homes listed overnight to just enter a balanced market, not even a buyer's market, but just balanced. Though, for reference, like for anyone who's only maybe just started looking to buy a home and you're wondering, is this new? Is this different? Or how long have we been in this type of environment? Well, if you can believe it, we have only been in a sustained buyer's market twice over the last 20 years. And that was during the global financial crisis and 2012. And it wasn't because there was a sudden spike in inventory. It's because people were afraid to buy at that time, right? Think of the global financial crisis. People were hoarding their money because the banks were failing and they didn't know what was going to happen next. So when we look at those two buyer's markets that happened twice over the last 20 plus years, they were only in existence for a grand total of a combined 14 months. It's almost a unicorn here in Vancouver. And in this episode, well, we're going to explore a little bit of how low inventory may just be the perpetual thorn in the side of the Vancouver real estate market for years and years to come. So real quick, want to say thank you as always for tuning in. We don't run ads on these episodes. The only thing that we ask of you is that if you're enjoying it or you get some value from it, please share it with at least one person that you know. Okay, let's get into it and let's talk about how low inventory may be the reality for the Vancouver real estate market for years to come. And right off the top here, we've got some fresh data in regards to the construction industry and the job market there as a whole. So the construction industry has really taken a hit over the last few months here. And as we all know, or as you have probably heard, you know, we've got this massive immigration happening, 1.2 million people in the country over the last 12 months. And yet we see less and less homes being built in the sense that, well, guess what? We just shed 44,000 construction jobs nationally last month alone. And then if you get, or you look a little even bit more macro here, you look over the last 3 months and that industry, the unemployment rate has risen by 4% over that last 3 months. And if 4% doesn't sound like a lot, well, that's the biggest downturn in that industry dating back to, again, the global financial crisis. Okay, that was 15 years ago. And then you got to go all the way back to the early 90s before that to see such a dramatic change in the job losses in the construction industry. So again, does it feel like the global financial crisis out there? Yeah, maybe to some, especially with variable rate mortgages right now. But at the end of the day, to even compound on top of this, let's take a look at the residential building permits, right? These are people that are applying for building permits. This is essentially, let's call it almost step one before they're going to even build. Those dropped again last month and are now currently the lowest level in over a decade. And Ryan, I think you've got a story about what's going on in Penticton right now as a very extreme example of this exact case.
I sure do. Yeah. So again, you know, just part of what we do, we're out with people who own various different businesses all over the province here. And I was with a client last week. He was telling me he does a lot of business up in Penticton. And he said last year they had upwards of 315 active building applications, building permits at the city. And this time, same time, but a year ahead, and they're sitting around 13 this year. So give you some perspective in terms of people are just going, you know, I'd love to add this laneway or I'd love to build a house. Holy cow, that's the cost of construction financing. Yeah, I think I'll wait.
Wow. So 315 down to 13. I mean, that's a collapse, right? That's a catastrophic change right there. And is a real solid indicator of what you can expect moving forward. So we've got record immigration happening. The new immigration minister just came out and said, hey, at our next announcement, you can expect us to maintain or increase our immigration targets moving forward. So basically, you can expect that side of the equation to continue. And then what's going to happen on the construction and build, and where's the supply side coming? Well, again, we've just given you the numbers here. They're basically collapsing across the board here. So more people in the country, less homes to move into. You don't need too much of a degree to understand where this pain is going to keep going. And realistically, from what we can tell, this is setting up, especially Vancouver, for even a worsening housing supply crisis down the road.
Dan, didn't they just reshuffle the cabinet where, like, you know, the housing or the immigration minister was now the housing minister? So, like, shouldn't they maybe have some job training before they switch out? I mean, you'd think that, you know, we would maybe curb some of this just so we could deal with the problem a little bit and then keep going. It just seems to me like it's inflating and it's the only way out, seems to be the policy. So anyhow, let's take a look at what's happening in the overall unemployment rate, because that's a key indicator as to whether or not we're heading towards a recession, or in my opinion, if we're already in one. However, the unemployment rate increased to 5.5% last month. That's up now 50 basis points in 3 months. Increases of this magnitude are rarely seen outside of a recession. So it's very possible that we're either already there or imminently heading into one. The question is Stats Can even calculating this correctly, based on the incredible rate of population over the last 12 months? I mean, how are they able to really keep tabs on all of this? It's kind of mind blowing. We just saw TELUS also cut 6,000 jobs. RBC and BMO are beginning to slash as well. This is what happens when we restrict the flow of capital, right? Businesses cannot compete. And those who were able to get low rates way back when they could get them are able to take advantage of this opportunity too. One thing I do want to note about employment numbers, because it's a pretty important part of this. And you see this maybe a little bit more in the States, but also it's very indicative of where we are as an economy. While we get these employment headlines that come out, they are often revised after the fact, a month or two after the fact. And the reason that that's done is because data is latent. There may be seasonal adjustments, methodology changes based on circumstances. There's a lot of different factors as to why it's done. Maybe massaging a narrative or a political narrative, who knows? At the end of the day, they get revised, and they often get revised down. So if we're already seeing job losses now, chances are they're actually worse than what they're already reporting. So I just wanted to bring that up because it's incredibly important to note. And my last point here, should the actual rate of employment drop closer to 6%, there will be, not potentially, I think there will be a definite sharp turn in bond yields as markets price in much greater odds of rate cuts in 2024 to help bring some balance to it.
So a lot of people losing their jobs right now, right? We're seeing the unemployment rate tick up at a time when housing is becoming the most unaffordable ever. And I mean, to that point, 2 weeks ago, we released a video on this channel that was called The Most Unaffordable Ever. And it talked about how the current home price in Canada, if you go out and get your typical mortgage, 20% down payment, you know, the average mortgage payment monthly was $3,500. And this video seemed to strike a chord. It ended up being our most watched ever. If you haven't seen it, please go check it out. It's 5, 6, 7 times the typical amount of views that we get on a video. So thank you for that. But the point of this story here, this comment, is that since then, well, guess what? A 5-year bond has now broken above 4.1%. This is a 15-year high. How does that affect affordability? Well, this is now going to push fixed rate mortgages even higher, up another 12 basis points, with all the banks saying, guess what? There's more hikes to come behind that. So within just 2 weeks here, the unaffordable video that we released is almost outdated in 2 weeks, because guess what? Now that average mortgage has pushed up even higher. And there was another story that had just come up to speak to how extreme it is out there. If you've heard of Habitat for Humanity, they are a group that basically helps people get into homes, rental homes, their own homes, they build around the world, etc. And there are true stories now where they're actually helping families who have household earnings of $100,000 that are coming in and applying for assistance to obtain even rental units right now. That's how extreme the situation is here in Canada, that you can earn six figures and basically have a hard time finding housing. It is so unaffordable. And again, how is that going to help when we're piling people on top of a housing crisis? It's just throwing fuel on the fire here and setting up for, again, a lot of pain down the road.
You know, Dan, it's a lot about kind of what we talked about the other day, how, you know, the wealth divide that's taking place now, you know, $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 for a family should be more than enough to have a sustained middle-class life in Canada. And it's just barely enough to get by right now. And in many instances, it's not enough. Right. And so we are literally inflating ourselves into problems and debasing our currency just because we can't seem printing and inflating. It's just not going to bring about the answer we're looking for. It creates a whole new host of issues too. So, and I just don't feel like it's there. This is a bigger problem. And I think interest rates aren't just the solution. So, anyhow, let's talk a little bit about sales, because sales are also very interesting here. I'll take a look at both Toronto, and I'm also going to take a look at Vancouver, because while they are typically mirroring themselves in terms of performance, Toronto is doing some things a little differently than Vancouver, and Vancouver is really showing its resilience as it can. So check this out. Toronto has dropped 9% in sales last month, down 15% in 2 months. This is well below the 10-year average. Meanwhile, listings continue to spike up by about 35% over the last 3 months. This is back up to the long-term average, and active listings are up 30% since May. And this is normally when inventory drops by about 10%. So we're seeing some big changes at a time when, seasonally speaking, they shouldn't be doing this. However, Vancouver, on the other hand, is up only 5% over that same time period. Now, we're a much different city, geographically speaking, so we have a ton of different constraints than Toronto does. And, you know, kind of like what we talked about, Vancouver is just not a normal real estate city in many regards, and this is a big evidence of that. Toronto prices, they're still rising, but they are slowing, right? And they very much could turn the other direction by fall. So what is also kind of interesting, though, the amount of foreclosures listed for sale is also dropping. So just 58 in total, down from 71 last month. But this is basically non-existent compared to the inventory issues that we're facing now. Dan, it's a wild story, but you know, one side of the country is doing one thing and the other side's doing something completely different.
Yeah, they seem to have separated once again. And I think let's stay in line with Toronto here and talk a little bit about their pre-sale condo market. Because as you can imagine, similar to Vancouver, Toronto pre-sale condos and properties are largely bought by investors. It's the most common asset class to be purchased by investors. Yet that segment of the marketplace is taking an absolute beating. And what I mean by that is, if you were to go into Toronto and buy your typically or average priced condo and get a mortgage at the average rate and do an 80% loan to value, and then rent it out at current market rates, even though current market rates are all time high, you would still be negative cash flow to the tune of $1,300 per month. So understandably, not a very sexy investment at this time. So the investor segment of the pre-sale market are essentially pulling back, right? Nobody wants to go in and say, all right, give me something that guarantees I lose $15,000 a year of cash that I got to continue to pay into this thing. This has resulted in pre-sale prices dropping for the first time, get this, 10 years. Pre-sale condo prices have risen for 10 years straight. But what does that mean? Well, prices are still $1,550 a foot. So big number. So if you were to buy a 1,000 square foot two bedroom, you're paying $1.55 million for that. And that price drop I was talking about, well, it's down 1% year over year. So not significant yet, but hey, all downturns start at, you know, zero, for example. So this is the first decline we've seen in that segment of the marketplace since 2013. And so what are the developers doing, right? They can't just sit on dead product. They have to move it. So they are shaving their margins. They are increasing buyer incentives. They are increasing realtor incentives and commissions and decorating allowances, this type of thing. So much so, and it's getting so extreme. And sure, this is an outlier, but hey, those are the most interesting to talk about. There was an ad for one developer in Toronto who was offering buying agents, the realtors, 10% commission on properties. Now, this was for a detached property and townhomes, actually. But could you imagine what they have to pay out? So if they were to sell a $1 million townhouse, they're paying the realtor who brought the buyer $100,000. But that's coming out of their pocket, of course, right? So again, you've just lost another 10% of your margins on that property. Okay, now, what about all those pre-sales that people bought, let's say 3 years ago, or even at the height or the low of the pandemic, however you want to phrase it, when rates were super low and everybody felt rich? Well, a lot of these properties spiked in value and then they dropped off, and a lot of them are not appraising. What does that mean? Well, somebody went out, and this is again a true story that came through the feed the other day, that somebody had bought a pre-sale property for $1.6 million. It appraised for $1 million. Okay. Without a pre-qualification in place, that means that buyer has to cover the spread of $600,000 in cash. Not too many people can just pony up $600K overnight when they found out that their appraisal came in that short. So we're really keeping kind of a close eye on the pre-sale completion space in Toronto, because guess what? There's 80,000 of them under construction right now. So how many buyers won't be able to complete because either they don't have that pre-approval locked in, and so all of a sudden they're applying and they can't even afford that condo they bought like they could when they originally bought it, you know, 36 odd months ago. And, you know, how many of them are going to find out that their appraisal comes in super short, right? Things can go either way, of course, over the next couple of quarters here, but definitely something to pay attention to. And as a quick reminder there, just so you know, almost every pre-sale project, you can get a pre-approval before they even break ground, meaning you can lock in your rate and you can lock in the value of that property. For example, Mr. $1.6 million here, had he worked with the right lender, he could have actually locked in an appraisal on the purchase date, meaning it would, even though it's technically gone down by $600K, the bank's eyes would still look at it as if it was $1.6 million. So for anyone out there who has a pre-sale condo or pre-sale property under contract and you are not pre-approved, go lock that in now. Because even if rates go down, you will benefit by them coming down. But if they go up, you will be protected to that upside. Okay, so yeah, not all the happiest stories today, but these are the reality. And these are a lot of things that we want to, well, A, protect people from, and B, be prepared for. And so I think it kind of opens up the question here, Ryan, is like, knowing all of this and having our boots on the ground and seeing and feeling what we do day to day to day here, when and how is Vancouver going to get back to a buyer's market? Or is that just, you know, again, gone the way of the dinosaur?
Well, that's a complicated question with probably a multitude of different answers. I would venture to say that something more painful or catastrophic would need to take place in order for a buyer's market to happen. Even then, I'm concerned about how long buyers would have to exercise this. I think a buyer's market in Vancouver looks like a complete recession in our economy. I feel like Vancouver's housing is such an integral part of the local economy that the local economy would have to, it'd have to be a buyer's market in every sector of the economy for that to happen here as well. I think it would just take, it's not going to just be a pure act of interest rates or a pure act of immigration. It would need to there would have to be something more catastrophic to enter a long-term buyer's market. We've been in a seller's market for a long time compared to the buyer's market opportunities. You know, we're talking years versus months, right? And I just don't. I think something catastrophic would need to take place. Something very drastic. Anyhow, I don't know, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree. And again, I mean, that's just kind of history repeating itself, right? The GFC, the global financial crisis, brought us into a buyer's market. But again, it's an artificial one. It's a buyer's market created out of the fear of the future not being even remotely financially sound, if you will. So again, it's created by the lack of sales, not by the increase of inventory. Very different, right? Mm. If we had a flood of inventory in a marketplace where people could afford and feel financially sound, it would be completely different than saying, oh my goodness, the world is collapsing around us. Let's just not make a move and do anything, right? There's a lot of other things that were collapsing then too.
Totally. I think you make a really good point, Dan. And that point is that really a buyer's market, if you're going to enter a buyer's market, you need supply. Supply is a big part of that market. Otherwise, it won't sustain as a buyer's market. It'll be a fluctuation in the flow of capital. People just won't be able to buy for a period of time. But then the problem is they all get released at the same time. So you end up going to compete with the very same people who were holding off when you were, right? So it doesn't create an environment where buyers will be given the time they need for supply to catch up to the demand, because the people providing the supply, they don't get any kind of creative breaks from borrowing money or construction financing, when really in a housing crisis, there should be a tax break or an incentive for people providing housing stock to the demand levels so that supply can truly catch up. But that would mean, you know, we'd have to, developers would look like they're the bad guy in that respect. And I don't think they're into that picture. So I, again, you know, it's a difficult way of navigating this situation. But I do agree entirely with what you're saying. It is completely supply-based in order for that sustainability to take place.
Yeah, and as hard as it is right now to be a developer in Vancouver, and when I say hard, it's obviously dealing with the city and dealing with how tight the margins are today, but they are the ones who also have so much opportunity in this landscape. Obviously, if you build the thing and people want the thing, well, again, get that thing to market, and it's something that we look forward to potentially helping people with in the near future here. So I think that's the right place to wrap this one up. Thanks as always for tuning in, and have a great day.
That wraps up this edition of the Vancouver Life Podcast.
For more information on this podcast and to access a ton of free downloads, investment opportunities, current market info, and homes for sale, you can find it all at www.thevancouverlife.com.
Thanks, and we look forward to bringing you more podcasts about Vancouver real estate.